Hey everybody, Nate here. Before the show, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about our sponsor, the Snack Nanny. The Snack Nanny is the latest, greatest spill-proof bowl. It's the first snack bowl for kids with a self-closing door. The Snack Nanny allows kids to snack freely without overeating, keeps kids entertained, and prevents them from creating a mess for mom and dad to clean up. Kids and parents love the Snack Nanny. It's easy to use, easy to clean, and includes portion control features that only the Snack Nanny offers. To order, go to www.snacknanny.com. or order from Amazon. Remember, you support our sponsors and they support us. Thanks, and Nihei Debiru. Hi everyone, and welcome back to Chop Talk. I'm your host, Nate England. If you listen to this show on iTunes, please write a review and give us a 5-star rating. Also, don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Let's start by announcing a few upcoming events. On April 24th and 25th, Robert Bowles will be hosting the ISA International Martial Arts Seminar in Fort Wayne, Indiana. To find out more, visit www.shuri-ru.com. From June 11th to 15th, Neil Stolzmark will hold the 14th Annual Warrior Gashiku Seminar in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. This year's guest of honor is Minoru Nakazato, 10th Dan and Shorinru Shorinkan. Find out more at www.authenticancientarts.com. From June 26th to 28th, Philip Keppel will host the 31st USKK International Karate Kobudo Championship Seminar and Tournament in Peoria, Illinois. Find out more at www.uskk.org. From October 2nd to 4th, also in Peoria, Illinois, Joseph Walker will host the Kagami Bikari Gashiku. Go to AOK Karate on Facebook.com for further details. Also, in early November, the Kosho School of Karate will host a major event in Cincinnati, but we're not quite ready to make that announcement yet. We'll talk more about this in the next few weeks. If you have an upcoming seminar, tournament, or other martial arts event, let us know and we'd be happy to announce it on the show. This week's guest is my friend, business partner, occasional employer, and teacher, Sensei David Hammond. Mr. Hammond is currently the head instructor and co-owner, along with myself and Bob Voles, of the Kosho School of Karate in Cincinnati, Ohio. He's a 7th degree black belt in Shuri-Ru Karate, a member of the United States Karate Do Kai, the Shuri-Ru style head for the USKK. He's a double Axe Award recipient as a distinguished student of Master Philip Keppel. He's been inducted into the Bushido International Society for his outstanding competition career. He's the Ohio State Representative for the USKK, and he's the President of the Life Membership Society for the USKK. David Hammond began his karate training in 1973 under Sensei Philip Keppel. He studied karate under Master Keppel and his black belt students, including a lot of recognizable names in the karate world. Randy Holman, Mark Shear, Ray Bloom, Gene Nelson, Joe Walker, Mike Sheen, Tony Fiak, Rick Beach, Vicky Johnson, and Mark Peterson. Others training around the same time as Mr. Hammond are also well known, such as Steve Mott, Ron Rollins, Rick Martis, Wilfred Lothar, Randy Lloyd, Clark Wade, and Alan Cromer. He also became involved in the business side of the karate world, eventually becoming the manager and instructor of a number of Sensei Keppel's branch schools, located in Peoria and Pekin, Illinois, Cleveland, Dayton, Ohio, and Champaign, Illinois. Mr. Hammond traveled in the United States Karate Association tournament circuit, competing in national and international competitions, taking first place a total of 22 times. In 1980, Hammond left the karate business to pursue a design degree at the University of Cincinnati. Upon arriving in Cincinnati, Hammond began training and instructing at the Kosho School of Karate, the school founded and at that time owned by Shuri-Ru Chief Instructor Michael Awad. While attending UC, Hammond completed design internships in Columbus, Ohio, where he organized a karate club, and later in Winchester, Virginia, he taught the advanced students at the Tom Glass Karate Club. In 1984, he graduated from UC with a Bachelor of Science degree in Industrial Design and took a position with Index Design Associates in Cincinnati, maintaining a dojo in their office. In 1993, he started his own product design business, David Hammond Design, and in 1994, he opened the Northside Karate Club in Cincinnati. During this time, he continued to train with both Master Keppel and Mr. Awad. He He has also trained with a long list of prominent karate instructors, including Glenn Keeney, Mel Wise, Master Robert Trias, James McLean, Ross Scott, and just too many others to list here at the beginning of the show. But we're going to post his full resume at www.choptalk.podbean.com. Over the years, David Hammond has taught and influenced hundreds of students in many locations, and I consider myself lucky to be one of them. And he continues to compete in tournaments across the country. To find out more about the Kosho School of Karate and Sensei David Hammond, go to www.koshoschoolofkarate.com. Visit the show's page on Facebook, call 513-510-3844, or email koshoschoolofkarate@gmail.com. To find out more about his industrial design business, David Hammond Design, or the products he currently has on the market, including the Snack Nanny, go to www.davidhammon.com. That's DavidHammon.com, or email dhammon@davidhammon.com. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. All right, Mr. Hammond, thanks for sitting down and talking with me. It's been a while. I should have done this a lot sooner. But let's start off. I want to ask about how you got started in karate. I know you've been in for over 40 years at this point, but when did you start off?
Well, I actually started in karate in 1973.
Okay.
And prior to that, I studied in my backyard with my brother with using Bruce Tegner books.
Okay.
And I don't know if you're familiar with those, but Bruce Tegner was kind of the go-to guy at the bookstore. He had a whole series of books on self-defense.
Okay.
And I'm not sure what his background was, but they were small paperbacks, and it was usually him and some assistant in gray sweatpants and a gray sweatshirt.
Okay.
And it was defense against punches and knife attacks and things like that. But it was a little hard to learn from those because there'd be a picture on one page with two guys standing about 4 feet apart with their hands out, like facing each other. And then the next picture on the next page, he's got the guy already blocked and in an arm bar. And there's some writing down below, like how to do that, but it didn't really show you how to get there.
There's no in between.
Yeah, so yeah. It was a little difficult. But we practiced throwing each other, flipping each other around in the backyard and tried some of the chokes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then,
how old were you? Were in the teenager at that point?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So mom and dad were okay with you choking each other out?
Oh, yeah. They didn't know much about it, I guess. But I'd always heard there was a school in Peoria, which was Peoria, Illinois, mm-hmm. about, I don't know, 10 miles from where we grew up.
Which was in Pekin.
Yeah. And coincidentally, where your father grew up.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bizarre coincidence. So you and I met for the first time here in Cincinnati. I was going to Miami University, and I drove down to work out at the Kosho School of Karate. At that time, it was still run by Sensei Awad. And you were teaching that night and started talking. And yeah, you wound up being from Pekin, Illinois. Here I'm in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I meet a guy from Pekin, Illinois. And you were actually went to high school with my dad, I think.
Yeah.
My dad was a year older than you, my uncle was a year younger, and you were right in the middle. Mm-hmm. So as far as we know, no one ever crossed paths.
Right.
But a really strange coincidence that we ran into each other two states over.
Yeah, and it feels kind of funny being old enough to be your dad.
Well, it must really feel funny when we go out to the chicken wing place or something like that after we work out, and it's like, oh, you and your son are here. And
No,
we got to explain to everybody. In fact, the bank guy did the same thing. I went in to make a deposit. He's like, oh, you're running out of school with your dad? No. It's my business partner.
But I did look in the old school, yearbook, and I saw a picture of your dad, and he does, he looked familiar
from
what he looked like back then. I'm sure I wouldn't recognize him now.
Right. But you recognize him, maybe you passed him in the hall or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Nobody ever got booked or anything, got their books knocked out of their hands or got a
swirly.
Not that anyone's willing to admit.
Right, okay. Right. So so I grew up in Pekin, and I had thought about going to Peoria, and the school up there was Mr. Keppel's school, mm-hmm. the Phil Keppel School of Karate. it was like famous. It was the only school around, but it was the only school to go to, mm-hmm. was the word. And there were a couple people in high school that had worked out there. I think Rick Martis was one. I can't think of the others, but I went to watch a class one time with my brother. I think it was a Friday night, and we stepped into the sort of vestibule area and watched. We were watching a class. There were a couple of big brown belts teaching, and of course we knew nothing about it.
Right.
And they were like breaking arms and legs and throwing people in chokes and down. And of course they weren't actually breaking things, but they were going through the routines.
They were showing how to do
it. They were going through the routines, yeah. And it was pretty. It was pretty impressive, you know. Yeah. I didn't expect to see that. You know, it was pretty eye opening. The kind of brutal stuff that they were working.
And at that point, this was 1973, it wasn't as pervasive. I guess, was Kung Fu even on TV yet? I guess there have been a few Bruce Lee movies and, of course, Billy Jack.
Oh, yeah. Billy Jack was the big thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was when we were, I don't know, early high school, mm-hmm. maybe. But, yeah, Kung Fu was on TV. And The Green Hornet, of course, had been on TV as a series, and Bruce Lee was in that as Kato.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a scene in that one of those shows where some guys were following Bruce Lee through the forest, and initially I couldn't remember what he did. I knew it was really cool, and then I saw the series again later,
mm-hmm.
and actually what happened was these two people started to walk past him, and he stepped out and hit one of them with a shoto right in the throat, and it was like, well, it was pretty cool,
yeah.
but not really intricate, you know,
right.
Sophisticated or intricate.
After you've been practicing it for a while, it's like, oh,
yeah.
I can do that.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I remember, okay, yeah, he just hit the guy with a shoto. But Kung Fu was also on TV at the time that we started, and I remember that because the guy that I started with, we would go over to our buddy's house in the evenings to hang out, and they'd be watching Kung Fu on TV. We'd be in the kitchen kicking each other and working our own stuff. But it was always interesting to watch what David Carradine did, uh-huh. Check out the techniques and stuff. But in the very beginning, I went to watch with my brother, and he decided he wasn't interested in signing up, so I went for another year. So it was about 72 when I went into the Sensei Keppel's dojo the first time.
Okay.
That was on Knoxville in Peoria. That was the only dojo he had, and he had had a dojo at certain locations, one dojo at different times in different locations in Peoria.
When we had James McLean on a couple months ago, he talked about some of the different locations. I know he started what he was saying. He basically lived at the dojo, literally. It wasn't an exaggeration. He lived in the basement of the dojo, sleeping on a picnic table.
Yeah.
And then he talked about one on Main Street and some of the different
right.
locations. So
right.
it was bouncing around Peoria.
Right. And I think it was downtown in a couple of locations, and then Main Street, which is sort of up on the hill near Bradley University.
Okay.
And at the time that I investigated it the first time, the dojo was on Knoxville
okay.
Avenue, which is also sort of up the hill away from downtown. So a year later I showed up again with my buddy Steve Mott, and we watched again, and Rick Beach was running the dojo at that time. He was
okay.
the dojo manager, and he signed us up. He brought us in the office, said, "You want to do it? Let's do it now." So we said okay, and we signed up.
He didn't want to let you go for another year.
No. So, coincidentally, Sensei Keppel was at a stage in his career, karate career and professional career, where he had decided to leave his job at Caterpillar Tractor Company. He was a security guard there. He may have been doing other things. That's what I remember. But karate was very popular then. With Bruce Lee and all the movies and stuff, and it was becoming really popular, across the school. Karate schools were cropping up everywhere, mm-hmm. and he decided to get into the business.
Okay.
So with some students of his who were also businessmen, they helped him form an organization, and he started opening schools around the Midwest. Mm-hmm. And the first school that he opened was in Pekin.
Okay.
So, ironically, we went to Peoria to sign up in our first class, and our school that we were going to be working out in was in Pekin.
Looking for a way to gain an edge on the competition? Want to give your body some much-needed relief and relaxation? Try Medical Resort ATAC, Okinawa's specialist in sports therapy and wellness care. ATAC offers customizable massage therapy. Try their oxygen chamber for increased metabolism and faster recovery from injuries. Or take their stretching course to improve flexibility. ATAC is used by professional athletes from the Ryukyu Golden Kings, FC Ryukyu, and Ryukyu Corazon. Stop into their center Monday through Saturday at 12830 Oroku in Naha City, Okinawa. Call 098-859-1890 or visit them on the web at www.sanso-atac.com. That's www.sanso-atac.com. Hey everybody, Nate here. I just want to take a minute to talk about our new sponsor, the Micro Bar. The Micro Bar is an innovative, cutting-edge new type of seating that's perfect for restaurants, cafes, bars, and even the party room at home. The Micro Bar is a very versatile product, and it's perfect for residential or commercial applications. It can be used alone or grouped with other Micro Bars to create multiple seating arrangements. The Micro Bar is perfect for anywhere that seating and standing people interact. So whether you're looking for a new piece of furniture for the breakfast nook at home or you're remodeling a restaurant, go to www.microbar.net. That's www.microbar.net. Or call 513-232-9405. Thanks again for supporting our sponsors.
All right, so shorter drive, but since you were now signed up in Pekin, did that automatically make you the highest rank?
Well, no, not actually.
Okay.
We didn't know the school was there, but there were already some students working out.
Okay.
Because I remember... I guess everybody in karate probably remembers this. I remember working out in the first class when I was the last guy in the second row.
Yeah.
And, just over time, next thing I knew, I was the first guy in the second row, mm-hmm. and then the last guy in the first row, and then eventually the first guy in the first row. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was pretty fun back then. There were, it was pretty tough. The instructors were very strict.
Mm-hmm.
Workouts were hard. In the beginning, we were working out on tile.
Ooh,
just linoleum tile floor. So it was very slippery.
Yeah.
And easy to fall down. And we also didn't have safety punch and kick back then. We had these little...
You didn't have any... when you were sparring, there was no hand pads.
Well, there were like football... In the football world, they had these pads that were sort of like ace bandages that you slipped onto your hands. They were like back knuckle pads. Mm-hmm. All they did was protect the top of your hand, mm-hmm. in case a sharp point hit the top of your hand in football. Mm-hmm. So that's what we wore, and so there really wasn't much padding. Mm-hmm.
And you're working out at that time at that school. There's a lot of people at that school that were that are pretty well known names,
you know,
not just Master Keppel, but Randy Holman, Joe right. Walker. Who else was around at that
right.
time?
Ray Bloom. Not a lot of names that might be known nationally, but
right.
a lot of really long standing students of Sensei Keppel,
and a lot of people that are still in karate and have gone on to run schools of their own
right,
and
right.
done tournaments.
Right. And Joe Fiok ran the school at that time. He was an excellent instructor and mentor, phenomenal karate man as far as technique and precision and strength. And it was just really a really interesting time. So again, the timing was right for me. I was really intrigued by karate and. Mm. getting into the whole thing, training hard, and that was recognized pretty quickly. And somebody told Mr. Keppel, "Hey, as you start opening these schools up, maybe Dave Hammond would be a good candidate to run one of them for you someday."
Okay.
So they approached me. I think Mr. Fiat did first and said, "Would you be interested?" I said, "Sure,"
yeah.
And I started learning. I was getting probably close to yellow belt at that time. Or
so this is they approach you really early on.
Or was it yellow belt? Right.
Six months, a year, something like
that. Right. So the idea was I could be a school manager. Mm-hmm. I may not be the sensei of the school.
Okay.
But I could do the business part.
Okay.
I could teach introductory lessons and, and that sort of thing and learn how to run the business. And then as I progressed in rank, possibly have my own school someday.
Okay.
Well, that was crazy. You know, what an opportunity.
Right.
I didn't know if that would happen, but it sure was an opportunity that I jumped on.
Mm-hmm.
So so what happened was I did that. I started. I went to the Peoria Dojo after I was a yellow belt, and I started learning the business system, you know, how to keep the books and how to teach the introductory course and sign people up and all that sort of thing. And then I started moving around and up in the business part, as well as advancing in rank. So
the introductory course at that time, we talked about that because you know, we were trying to work out the one here in Cincinnati. At that time, it was what, 5 days?
It was. I think it was 5 lessons.
Okay.
And it was designed to introduce people to the school, tell them about what karate is all about, what the programs are all about, you know, sort of the classes that they could sign up for. The idea was to try to sign people up for a greater length of time,
right,
so we could give them a deal, but we could make more money in the end. Yeah, I think it was based off of some other business models out there in the fitness industry.
Okay.
So from learning the business at the Peoria Dojo, I then went back. I was assigned the Pekin Dojo, and I helped run the Pekin Dojo for a while. I think I was assistant manager to Mr. Fayok. And then an opportunity came up where Mr. Keppel was going to buy Sensei McLean School, one of Sensei McLean Schools.
Okay, so which one? That's another thing we talked about in his episode, that he's ran schools in most of the towns in the Midwest.
Right. He's run schools in a lot of places over time. He was in Cleveland at the time.
Okay.
I had never met the man, but I had heard of him.
Sure.
And heard stories, and his picture was in the Pekin Dojo.
Okay.
So there was sort of an interim period where, since they had made the business deal with Mr. McLean, but the instructor that he was going to put up there wasn't ready. He had some other commitment somewhere. So they asked me if I wanted to move to Cleveland for a month and run Mr. McLean's dojo. And
okay.
It's like, wow, that's a pretty tall order.
Yeah.
You know? But I said, sure. So I packed up and drove to Cleveland, and Mr. McLean had a dojo in Euclid. I think it was 183rd Street. I can't remember exactly, but it was an old business district, kind of like here in where the dojo is in Mount Washington.
Okay, so there's similar shops, businesses, restaurants in the same strip as the dojo.
Right.
Okay.
And the dojo was laid out pretty similar, an old kind of old strip, you know, business district. And I was welcomed there. He had some great students working out in that dojo at the time. They were all very hospitable and, you know, took care of me and brought me home for dinner and stuff like that. Because I was living in the basement on a picnic table.
It was your turn.
Yeah. And I did that for about a month, I think it was. And then Nick Tarpin was the one that was going to go up and run that school. He was ready and he went. And I came back to Peoria then. Mm. So I did about a month up there, my first tour away from home.
Yeah.
And it was a great experience. And from there, I think I ran the Pekin School for a period of time myself. And then there was another hitch or something in the Cleveland School, and they needed me up there. I went up there again, I think, for a month, as I recall. And then I came back to Pekin, and then that might have been the time when it was sort of in between assignments. Mm-hmm. And there was a Nationals, Grand Nationals in Miami, Florida. Mm-hmm. So since they sent me down to live with Mike Sheen for a couple of weeks in Springfield, Illinois, Mike Sheen was running this, had been...
Now, at this point, how many schools does he have? Because he had the one in Pekin, and obviously maybe the first one he opened. Now he's bought the one in Cleveland. Is it growing at this point, or are there just three, four?
At that point, I think maybe three or four. It was okay. Springfield, Pekin, Peoria. He was about to open a Dayton, Ohio school.
Wow.
Or he had opened it. Champaign. There was a Champaign school that opened. This all happened about the same time.
Okay.
So I went to live with Mike Sheen for a week or two in Springfield, Illinois.
Yeah.
And that was interesting, an interesting experience.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know Mike Sheen or heard of him.
I've definitely heard of him. We may have met at the USKK.
Yeah.
The Nationals, but I don't know him that well. So.
Yeah. So he was a great guy, pound for pound, probably one of the toughest guys anywhere. I think at one time, maybe even at that time that I was working out there in the school, he weighed 113 pounds.
That's tiny.
Yeah. And so I don't know how big he was, maybe 5'5 or something like that. Now, I think that's what he weighed. That's what I remember. But he could put it on you.
Hmm.
Yeah, he was really good, tough guy. Anyway, I worked out with him for a couple of weeks. I think they just didn't have anything else, didn't know what else to do with me at that time until Nationals, and we were all going to go to Nationals together from Springfield. So we loaded in a car and drove to Miami, Florida to compete in the Nationals.
So this is one of those old karate road trips.
Yeah.
How many did you pile into the Oldsmobile?
Well, we started off with four or five guys in a Volkswagen, and we made it to Mammoth Cave, Kentucky. Before the car broke down.
Okay.
Yeah.
Everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks. Remember, if you have an upcoming seminar, tournament, or other martial arts event, let us know, and we'd be happy to announce it on the program. And now, back to the show.
We got there, the car broke down. Of course, that was before cell phones and stuff, but we made a call back to some people that had not left Peoria yet, and Alan Cromer and others were driving through, and they picked us up.
Mm.
And we went to, we joined them, it was probably six of us in a van.
Okay.
That drove the rest of the way, and that was an interesting experience. All the tournaments are, all the road trips are, of course. Dr. Mel Wise was still alive at the time, and Mike Sheen knew him, and Joe Fiak, some of the students that are a little older than had more time in than me. Mm. So we went over to Mr. Wise's dojo and met him and talked with him for a little bit.
His school was in Florida.
His school was in Miami, yeah. Not that far from where the tournament was. So it was a big tournament. Right on the hotel, right on the beach. You know, really nice. Really, really nice. And it was that tournament that I guess I was a purple belt at that time.
Okay. You've been in for a few years.
I think
years.
I did pretty well in kata. I may have won that division.
Oh, nice.
And then I fought for first and second place that night, and I got smoked.
Oh.
I fought one of Mr. Keeney's guys. So I made it to the top.
Yeah.
But I fought one of Mr. Keeney's guys, and I think they were watching me all day, and they knew everything I could do.
They were taking notes.
Yeah.
You threw this technique.
And yeah. Kind of point anyway, it was fun. It was up on a stage in front of like 1,500
oh,
people.
Oh, wow.
So it was pretty wild.
That's a big, you know, now the tournaments are, there's so many different organizations now, and the tournaments are broken up, this style, that style, this organization, and so it's not like it was. I mean, there was probably, you know, you hear stories about, you know, 70 or 80 people in a yellow belt division, and then all the spectators, because it was a really big event, and all the top karate people were at these certain events then, because the USKA was nationwide, and all these groups and people hadn't splintered off yet.
Yeah. The first tournament I went to was the USKA Nationals, United States Karate Association Nationals in Milwaukee. Mm. So that must have been like 74. And I think there were about 80 people in the yellow belt division. Mm. I remember in kata we lined up and ran in two rings, about 40 people in each ring.
Wow.
Yeah. And I thought I did really well, and I didn't have a clue. But that was my first tournament. It was a big one.
It's easy to get lost in the shuffle when you're, you know, one of 80 yellow belts.
Yeah. So then let's go back to Illinois.
Yeah.
When I came back after the trip to Miami, I was working out again back in the Peoria, Pekin area. And Mr. Fock, who was running a school in Dayton, Ohio, had to take a break, got out of the business, and I went out to run that school.
Okay.
And it's a school that Sensei Keppel had purchased from Sonny Johnson.
Okay.
And I don't know if it was a Tracy's Karate School, but I think it was... it might have been a franchise. I'm not really sure. But I went out there and trained at that school and worked out with those guys and taught some basic introduction to Shuriryu classes.
Because they were doing some other...
They were doing another style, and since I wasn't really ready to change it over, he was happy with the guys that were there running it, and mm-hmm. they were just going to continue to run it under their style. So I moved out there and I lived in the back room.
Okay.
Yeah, it looked like it was a place that one time was had several sales offices, small rooms, a whole bank of small rooms. And they were actually teaching private lessons in those rooms.
Okay.
And then, so I took over a couple of those rooms for my living accommodations. And that was the time when Rocky was, the Rocky movie had come out. And I remember setting my alarm for 4 o'clock in the morning and getting up and rolling over off of my sleeping bag and door that I was sleeping on.
Yeah.
And turning on my mixer with bananas and walnuts and honey and protein and raw eggs.
Raw eggs, oh God. See, that's something I could never handle. I can't eat eggs. I don't eat eggs. I couldn't handle that. I can't handle waking up early in the morning, and I can't handle the cold. Anything else I'm up for. I'll stay up all night and work out. I don't care, you know, but getting up early, working out under frozen waterfalls, help me out.
Well, you know, it was kind of a challenge, you know.
Yeah, okay.
That should be a good challenge. Let's do this for a month, mm-hmm. you know. So I would do that. That was always kind of a fun part of the training, you know, just come up with a new challenge for myself and do it for a period of time. So I was out there for about a year, and for whatever reason, Sensei decided that he didn't want to have the school in Dayton anymore. I don't know why, mm-hmm. but anyway, he made a financial decision to close that school down. So I packed all the stuff up and let all the students know and said my goodbyes and moved back. And it was the same time, actually, that management was going to change at the Champaign, Illinois school, and the reason for that was Rick Morris, who was running the school, mm-hmm. decided to go to chiropractic school.
Okay.
He decided to get into that business, and that may be the reason that, one of the reasons why Sensei closed Dayton, you know, he'd rather maybe have me running the Champaign School, and there was no one for the Dayton School at that time.
Maybe consolidate a little bit, you know, keeping that Champaign School open, which is maybe 90 miles from Peoria.
Right.
Is a little bit easier than, you know, two states away in a five, six hour drive.
Yeah. And that was a great opportunity for me. It was wonderful. It's just for your reference, it was a lot like, laid out a lot like the Cincinnati Kosho Dojo.
Okay, so
I mean, it looked almost identical to it, except for where the office is. Mm-hmm. We had a deck the same size. We had a beam across the top, just like that. It was in a strip mall, not an old kind of strip mall, you know, and right off of, I can't think of the name of the street, Springfield Avenue. It might have been 32 Springfield Avenue. But that was nice. He already had a number of students that were up to, I don't know, yellow, green, purple, purple belt. And they all continued to train there with me.
And this wasn't a style transition like you said. Dayton was a different style. I mean, this is, they were still doing the Shuri Roo there, and here just comes another instructor. So it was a pretty
And Rick Martis was an excellent instructor. So he had a bunch of really good students there. So you know, I fit right in. Everybody stayed. We signed up more students. It became a real kind of family. You know, we had families that signed up. We had a couple families where the father signed up and signed up three kids.
Wow.
And all kinds of really interesting students. So one of the things that was interesting about Champaign, Illinois was the fact that the university was there, of course, University of Illinois. And so
which is another strange coincidence, because that's where I went to undergrad school, and I ran University of Illinois Shuri Roo Karate Club there. So I had started the karate club there and ran that for when I started at University of Illinois. It was 2000, and that kept going. That organization kept going until even after I graduated, right up until I moved to Okinawa in 2007. So for 7 years, that group was going, and we started just working out in whatever gym space, or if there was an empty racquetball court, like that's where we had class that day, or out in the hall. Then we wound up, you know, getting space in the Y, and you know, getting a little bit more established there, also. So you know, this was a
So we both spent. I spent about 5 years there in Champaign teaching.
I mean, I lived there for, you know, I was at school there for 2 years until I graduated. But then afterwards, I moved back to Peoria, and I would drive back. Like, I'd drive back 90 miles twice a week to teach karate, which seems kind of insane to now when you think about doing that, spending an hour and a half, 3 hours on the road every night to teach. But
I have an interesting, you know, story about that. I used to go back to Peoria on Friday nights for class to work out, and even in the winter. I mean, there were times when, you know, I didn't make that much money teaching karate.
Right.
And there were times when the car needed repairs, and I didn't have the money to do it, so I would hitchhike back.
Wow.
And I actually hitchhiked in the middle of the winter a few times.
Wow.
So I just had to make sure that I got on the road in time to get to Peoria before it got dark, because hitchhiking in the dark in the middle of the winter is kind of tough.
Right.
But that was interesting too, you know, ran into some interesting folks.
Yeah, but you ran into some characters.
Mawari no hito ni sawo sukete imasen ka? Anata no karada wa kyusoku wo hitsuyo to shite imasen ka? Sports massage kenkou no specialist Medical Resort ATAC wo ichido torai shite mite kudasai. ATAC dewa okyaku sama no karada ni awaseta massage wo okunaimasu. Mata, ATAC no sanso shitsu ni mo torai shite mite kudasai. Taisha koujo, kega no soki kaifuki ni kikimasu. Junansei wo takameru stretching course ni mo torai shite mite kudasai. ATAC wa pro chimu Rukyu Golden Kings, FC Rukyu, soshite Rukyu Korazan no senshu mo ryo shite masu. Zehi ichido gorai ten kudasai. Open, Ketsuyobi kara Doyobi made, Okinawa ken, Nahashi, Oroku, Ichi no 28 no 30. Denwa bango 098 859 1890. Homepage mo cheko shite mite kudasai. www.sanso-atac.com. www.sanso-atac.com. Ego, Portugalo go, Spengo, Nihongo ga hanaseru staff ga imasu. Looking for great entertainment? Want to find the best deals on food and drinks? Use the PubPal app to find great establishments near you. View daily specials, find live bands, karaoke, even poetry. If you're looking for something to do, PubPal is the answer, and it's only a click away. Download the app on the Apple Store and get the Android app on Google Play. And don't forget to like them on Facebook. Visit PubPalUSA.com to find out more. That's PubPalUSA. PubPalUSA.
I guess hitchhiking was a little bit more socially acceptable than it is now, but it's still...
A little bit. But I didn't have any other way to get there, so...
Right.
So, Champaign, it was a nice school. I built a room in the back so I could live in the back of the school there. And the room was sort of built into the area that was at one time the locker room. I took a corner of it essentially, and made a, what do you call it, a Murphy bed.
Okay, those ones
folds
that flipped
down out of the wall. Yeah, and I had my hot plate and blender, and
it's all you need.
Was right at home. So while I was there, I had gone to a community college in Peoria.
Illinois Central College.
Illinois Central College.
That's where I started.
When I got out of high school, I was doing that while I was trying to decide what to do.
Yeah.
And I never really finished there when I took on the karate job. Mm-hmm. So during the time that I was in Champaign, since there was a community college there, I took that opportunity to finish off my classwork to get my associate's degree. And I also met some folks there that studied karate and got to know them a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I remember working out with them a few times, and then a tournament came up. They were associated with this group out of Chicago, and I apologize to those guys, but I can't remember the name of it now. But it was an organization that was kind of spread throughout the Midwest, and they had sponsored tournaments. And this was one of my bigger tournament achievements. It wasn't the biggest, largest tournament that I've ever been to.
Yeah.
But I won first place in kata. I won first place in weapons.
Wow.
I won first place in kumite.
Wow, the hat trick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the next thing, as tradition had it, the winner of the kumite division fought the... grand champion from the previous year, and I beat him.
So wow.
It was pretty
so he became
big.
The grand champion.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
So that was Champaign.
Did you say you had to, didn't you have to buy a belt at one time when you got to Champaign?
I made Shodan when I was in Champaign.
Okay.
So I came down there as a brown belt, and I don't know how long it was that I was there when I finally made Shodan, but of course I went back to Peoria to test.
Right.
And I had to buy my own black belt. I know some people got a black belt, and I don't know if they kind of forgot about me or what.
They forgot to order one, maybe.
Yeah, but yeah. I went back to Champaign without a belt.
Yeah.
And so I knew there was a school. There was a Korean school not too far from the dojo, and I called the sensei over there and asked him if I could buy a belt. And he says, well, only if you come over and talk with me first, because I'm not going to sell a belt to just anybody, which I appreciated. So I went over and introduced myself and said hi, and he sold me a black belt. Yeah.
Well, that's something, because a lot of people would just be, okay, I'll sell this guy a belt, whoever it is, yeah, and not check them out and make sure that they really were. You could have just been somebody who decided, I have a black belt now.
And yeah, going out and so I thought that was, I thought that was respectable.
Is Champaign, is that where Mr. McLean stayed with you for a while also?
Yeah. There was a time where I had an apartment up the street, or a house actually I was living in, and Mr. McLean.
This is the first time you've lived outside of a dojo for 5 years?
Actually, I lived in a couple of apartments.
Okay.
Over time, but it was the first real established residence rental outside the dojo. But at that time, I was living just up the street, and Mr. McLean was transitioning from, he had shut down his school in Cleveland, the other school. He had two schools.
Okay.
And he was...
not the one he had sold, but one he started later.
No, he had two at one time.
Okay.
And he sold one, which is the one that I helped convert over to Mr. Keppel's business. He had another one in Bedford, Ohio, which was, I can't remember how far away, maybe half an hour, 45 minutes. But he then sold that school. And so I'm not sure of the exact timing, but I know he was moving to Peoria, to the Peoria area at that time. He was kind of in between places. So he wanted to know if, I don't know, I guess we were just communicating by phone at the time, and he told me what his plans were, and he wanted to know if he could stay with me for a while, while he was making the transition. I said, sure, you can stay in a dojo. I've got a little apartment back there, and you're free to stay there as long as you want. So he did. He came and he lived there with me for, I don't remember now, a month or a couple of months. And that was cool. So he lived in the little apartment. But what an amazing guy, karate-wise and attitude and the whole thing. I mean, he's the real deal. And humble. I mean, and he'd lived in the back of dojos all his life, and he was happy to be there, and I was happy to have him. So that was cool. I had another story about today. Kind of a funny story about the dojo in Champaign.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Well, my dog lived with me there.
Okay.
Shoji,
okay.
Yeah. Now, Shoji, you know the term, right?
It was a Japanese screen.
Yeah. And I knew the term because I'd heard it, right? So I knew what it was. But it just seemed like a cool word, two-syllable word, good name for a dog, kind of Japanese. Mm-hmm. And I figured most people wouldn't know anyway.
Right.
So I named her Shoji, and she was a good dog. And I remember one time I was in the office, and middle of the day, and she came. She was in the back someplace. She was in the locker room or something. And she came into the office, and she was like acting funny, like she ate something. She was gonna throw it up or something. And sure enough, she had eaten a bar of Lifebuoy soap in the locker room, and she threw it up in the office,
Right.
So I cleaned that up, and at that point, too, she was pretty sick from it. She was, like, in a daze. She just kind of walking around, like she didn't know what she was doing, and in pretty bad shape. So I cleaned up her mess, and there was a closet in the office.
Okay.
It was kind of a long closet behind the wall. So I said, hey, just get back there and stay there, And she kind of looks at me. She's just happy to be there, but not feeling too good. So half an hour or so later, one of my private lessons came in. And these people are sitting down across the desk from me talking, and all of a sudden I smell this fart. And it's like really bad. And I'm looking at these people. I'm the only other person in the room, right?
Right.
And they're going, you know, they kind of raised their eyebrows. They're not going to say anything.
It was one of these so bad where you have to acknowledge something.
I had to say something. It was kind of funny.
Yeah.
So I said, hey, sorry for the smell, but I got a sick dog in the closet. And they're going, yeah, right. Oh, man. Anyway.
Did you sign him up?
I think I did.
Okay.
I had a pretty good sign-up rate. Sensei probably, didn't know about that story unless I told him later. He knew the dog lived with me.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember one time he was telling me, he says, that Martis, this is when because Martis ran the school ahead of time. He goes, yeah, he was always, there was something going on in those schools I never knew about, you know? He
says,
guys are always doing something no one ever told me. He says, one time I went down to that champagne dojo and Martis had puppies in the drawer. And I'm thinking, puppies in the drawer. Okay, knowing Rick Martis, I'm thinking he was probably selling puppies. He was you know, who knows if he was breeding them at home or he got them from a student, but I wouldn't doubt if he had an ad in the paper and he's selling puppies out of the dojo.
That's all for this week's show. Thanks again to my guest, David Hammond, for taking the time to talk with me. To find out more about the Kosho School of Karate and Sensei David Hammond, go to www.koshoschoolofkarate.com. Visit the show's page on Facebook, call 513-510-3844, or email koshoschoolofkarate@gmail.com. To find out more about his industrial design business, David Hammond Design, or the products he currently has on the market, including the Snack Nanny, go to www.davidhammond.com. That's www.davidhammann.com, or email dhammond@davidhammond.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week with the second part of my interview with Sensei David Hammond. Nihei de biru and mataya. Everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.